Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank Q1 2021 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. Please go ahead.
Good day, everybody. My name is Nneka Onyeali-Ikpe. It is my pleasure to welcome you to Fidelity Bank Q1 2021 earnings call. We uploaded the IR presentation to our website two days ago. I hope you had time to review it. Nevertheless, I will give a general overview of our performance in the review year and then take your questions. There are very few changes on the macro front since our last earnings call. We still face the same headwinds that have plagued us in the past month, namely high inflation, general insecurity, and low accretion to the external reserve. However, on a positive note, the IMF revised its 2021 GDP growth forecast for Nigeria to 2.5% from the earlier projection of 1.5%, citing stronger economic recovery as the count of COVID-19 vaccines increased. Another good news for the economy is the relative stability in the oil prices compared to the last year's oil prices, which hovered between $60 per barrel and $65 per barrel in the review period. I will now speak to our Q1 numbers. Although we have seen rates inch up from 2020 full year-end levels, our yields in the earning assets reduced to 9.4% in Q1 2021. In the same period, our cost of funds declined from 3.6%-2.5%. The cumulative effect of this was that our net interest margin remained constant at 6.3%. The drop in average funding cost resulted from our balance sheet management efforts. Firstly, we grew our CASA by 70 billion and released 19 billion of our most expensive pocket funds. This increased the volume of low-cost deposits from 77% in December 2020 to 78.8% in the review period. In addition, we refinanced our seven-year 30 billion Tier 2 bonds issued in 2015 at 15% per annum with a cheaper
Ladies and gentlemen, if you could please remain online. We are trying to get the main speaker reconnected. Ladies and gentlemen, if you could please remain online. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been rejoined by the main speaker. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Okay. We apologize for this technical glitch. I'll start again from our Q1 numbers. Although we have seen rates inch up from 2020 full year levels, our yield on the earning assets reduced to 9.4% in Q1 2021. In the same period, our cost of funds declined from 3.6%-2.5%. The cumulative effect was that our net interest margin remained constant at 6.3%. The drop in average funding cost resulted from our balance sheet management efforts. Firstly, we grew our CASA by 70 billion and released 19 billion of our most expensive pocket funds. This increased the volume of our low-cost deposits from 73% in December to 78.8% in the review period. In addition, we refinanced our seven-year 30 billion Tier 2 bonds
issued in 2015 at 15% per annum with a cheaper 10-year 41.2 billion Tier 2 bond priced at 8.5%. This moderated our average borrowing cost by 61 basis points to 4.5%. The activities I have just mentioned caused our interest expense to reduce by 26.2% from 19.3 billion in Q1 2020 to 14.3 billion in the reporting period. On the other side of the balance sheet, despite the 3.7% increase in our earning assets, interest income reduced by 2% from 43.9 billion to 43 billion. This is because the market conditions did not allow us to replace a matured security with instruments of much lower yield, with commensurate yield. Nevertheless, we will continue to optimize our loan pricing. Overall, our net interest income increased by 7%.
On the other side of the balance sheet, despite a 3.7% increase in earning assets, interest income reduced by 2% from 43.9 billion to 43 billion. This is because the market conditions did not allow us to replace a few matured securities with instruments of a commensurate yield. Nevertheless, we will continue to optimize our loan pricing. Overall, our net interest income increased by 17.1% to close at 28.8 billion. Non-interest revenue increased by 66.7% to close at 12.1 billion from 7.2 billion in the previous period. While FX income increased by 3.9 billion and digital income grew by 0.6 billion, we also took a mark-to-market loss of about 4.6 billion. The mark-to-market loss was due to increasing market rates, which translated to a decline in the price and value of our government securities. Total OPEX grew by 6.2%, much lower than inflation rate of 18%, from 21.6 billion in Q1 2020 to 23.6 billion in the reporting period. The major driver of the increase in our OPEX was a 4.3 billion growth in regulatory costs. Cost to income ratio increased slightly from 65.1% to 66.8%, but we expect to meet our CIR guidance of less than 65% for full year. We expect our OPEX to come down in H1, since we will no longer take additional AMCON charge in H2, in line with the IFRIC 21 levies. We closed the period with a PBT of 10.1 billion, which translated to a growth of 53.9% compared to the preceding period. We are on track to meet our PBT guidance of 35.2 billion for full year 2021. Our deposits increased by 3.1% from 1.9 trillion full year 2020 to 1.7 trillion in the review period. This was driven by a 6.2% growth in demand deposits, while our savings deposits increased by 4.1%. Our low-cost funds accounted for 78.8% of the total deposits in the review period, and our savings deposits accounted for 25.2% of the total deposits. Net loans and advances increased by 7.6% to close at 1.42 trillion. However, if you back out the devaluation impact of 0.8%, the real growth was 6.8%. Less than 40% of our loan books are foreign currency denominated. Our NPL ratio, stage 3 loans, came in at 3.6% from 3.8% of 2020 full year. This was due to a 7.3% growth in the gross loan book to 1.5 trillion. Our regulatory ratios remain above the required thresholds, with our capital adequacy ratio at 18.4% and our liquidity ratio at 33.9%. Thank you very much, and we'll be happy to take questions now. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1. We will pause to see if there are any questions. The first question comes from Tunde Abidoye from FBN Quest Merchant Bank. Please go ahead, Tunde.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you for hosting the call. I have a couple of questions. The first one is on your cost of risk. Your cost of risk is 0.4%, and it's tracking below your guidance of 1 to 1.2%. I'm thinking, should we expect the cost of risk to increase in subsequent quarters, given that your guidance is unchanged? Secondly, I'd like to have some color on your NPLs with specific reference to the transport, agriculture, and those classified as others. Also, can you disclose what is contained in that segment classified as others? Thirdly, the expectation was that your your car would have gone up to close to 20% in Q1 following your Tier 2 bond raise. I know that your equity dropped a bit because of the fair value adjustments that you had to take, and you also had growth in credit risk. Can you provide some color on just around your car? And also, do you have any capital raising plans in view? Lastly, can you tell us what Fidelity is doing with respect to agency banking and how large your agency banking network is at this point? I'll pause on the other questions for now.
Thank you very much, Bioye. If you recall, in 2020 full year, we proactively increased our loan loss provisioning in view of the impact of COVID-19 on our customers in select sectors. This led to a very high cost of risk of 4.4. And since the beginning of the year, we have witnessed increased economic activity across all sectors, namely general commerce, oil and gas, construction, and the works. And this, we think, has translated to a higher asset quality. And if business activities continue at the pace it's going, expectedly our cost of risk will remain low and probably be lower than our guidance by the end of year. We will be quick to review our guidance downwards, and we will not be quick to review our guidance downwards. We'll just watch and see. But all indications, and with the way the market is opening up, we think that this 2020 will be better than 2021. Will be better than 2020. I can have the CRO speak more to this.
Just as the MD has said, we expect to see improvements driven by what we've seen in the economy, the rebound we've seen in the economy. So we're optimistic that that improvement will reflect in the cost of risk that we'll see in the second half of the year. We're still, of course, guided by the guidance that we gave, and that will continue to still guide the final position at the end of the period. Thank you. Now, I think you have some questions on the NPL distribution for some sectors, transport, agriculture, and others. Okay, now, in the transport sector, the NPLs we have there are some legacy loans that we had to some transport logistics companies. These are loans that we've fully provided for, and we're basically at the stage of working out solutions to those loans. So that's the bulk of the NPL you have in the transport sector. In the agriculture sector, it's an exposure to just one main customer. And we have taken about 99% impairment on that particular exposure. In others, what we have in others is an exposure to a company that is into water treatment, and that they had some rough patch, but right now they are basically bringing in some additional equity to revitalize this sector or this company, and it's in public, that's what we have in the public. What is a public water company, and we believe that in the upcoming period, the efforts to bring in additional equity and revive that company will bear fruit in that company. But so far, we've taken about 90% impairment on this particular exposure.
Okay. If you look at our capital, total qualifying capital is about 281 billion. If you add back the 18.8 billion that affected the AFS reserves, it will have taken it to about 299 billion, and that will have taken the capital to about 20%, it's about 19.6%. So you're right when you said we expected it to get there, but for that adjustment to the AFS. But if you also look at Q1, the loan growth was pretty strong, so loan growth was about 100 billion. And due to that loan growth, we had about a 200 billion addition to our credit risk. We also had some of the customers utilizing the credit balances they had in their account to bid for FX. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Can I ask a few more questions?
That's a question of the party, right?
Yes, I have another question.
We have 14,000 operating agents at the moment, and we are executing plans to grow our existing network to 100,000 in the next 12 months. We have we're currently implementing Saver, a very robust agency banking solution called Saver, being used by a couple of competitions that have done very well in this space. And the proposed solution will give us a competitive edge to offer more value-added services and optimize our system uptime. We hope to achieve our target of 100,000 agents by in the next 12 months.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ma. Yeah, thank you very much, Ma. If I may ask another question, basically with respect to your electronic banking transactions, I can see that you've shown us transaction volumes, but it will also be nice to see the value numbers. And also just for you to provide some color on what you're doing in that space, particularly with the fintechs. And also, I'd just like your view on the open banking framework in Nigeria.
Thank you for your question on the transaction volumes. We are at 5% of industry, and the NIP volume for the industry is about 60 trillion and 1.5 trillion on the POS. But I'll let the executive director, CIO, to speak to this.
So, for just the NGS, from a market perspective, about 5%, it's not much different between the volume and the value. We've seen almost across both. And if you look at the fees have also grown over the period. From a partnership perspective, from an open banking perspective, we've been partnering a lot with the fintechs. We have partnerships with them for airline solutions and a couple of other things. So for us, we think the open banking is positive. We're one of the first people to sign with the to sign up with the trustees and have an open banking foundation. So we think it's positive. We are not going to do everything alone. In some instances, we will compete, and in some instances, we will collaborate. But from a collaboration perspective, I think we've been working very well with fintechs over the past 3-4 years, and we've actually set up a team that now focuses basically on partnerships and ecosystems. We had a new CDO the last time we were speaking. He's coming on April 1st. So we think we're on the right track. We've got a new CIO also in place, and all these are just to drive our aspirations in the digital banking space. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's all for now.
And I'll just let the CDO will just say a few comments. Larry, over to you.
Thanks, Josh. And just picking up from where my MD left off with regards to open banking, we are launching a very robust strategy right now that's based on our API managers, which would allow us to integrate seamlessly with third-party providers. We are going to enthrone customer experience and customer service as the core of our strategy. And the general belief here is that we will come up with a sustainable advantage based on the ability to bring differentiated products to market very quickly and will help us to build very sticky relationships with our customers that will prove to be very profitable to us into the future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Kunde Ogunleye from SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call. Just a quick question on the operating expense. So I noticed there was a growth year on year and quarter on quarter. And then also looking at the monetizable cost was the banking resolution cost, which moved from 2.9 billion to 6.7 billion in Q1 2021. And then considering the growth in your assets hasn't been that significant to warrant for the growth in banking resolution cost. I don't know probably if you could share more light as regards the jump from the 2.9 billion to 6.7 billion. That's the first question. For the second question, you guided 15 to 20% for your deposit growth guidance. And then looking at the increase in rates, what should we be expecting in terms of your funding costs? And then the third question is on the fair value loss. So Ali, you said that the increase in rates on government securities led to the 4.6 billion loss. So we're expecting that to extend further to the rest of the year. And then on the next question, which is the loans to individuals. So when I look at your loans to individuals, I noticed that on stage two loans, there was an increase from 294 million in December to 2.4 billion in Q1. If you could shed more light on what led to that increase in stage two loans to individuals. And the next question is on just some clarity on the special bill instrument. If you could probably align on what particular line item is being classified under the interest income. That would be all for my question.
Accounted for that increase is income charge. You know, when your deposits increase, your income charge will increase, the percentage of the deposit. So this is because of the deposit growth that we experienced in Q1. So basically, the regulatory charge that is responsible for that increase. The second question
On the regulatory charge, is what percentage of the deposit? Just some clarity on the...
So AMCON, for AMCON, 0.5%, but for NDIC,
Hi, sorry, this is the operator. May I just ask if you could please repeat your response to Kunde's question, because we couldn't hear you clearly.
Okay, so for AMCON, it's 0.5% of total assets. And just given the growth in our total assets last year, driven by the deposit and loan growth. So the total AMCON cost was moving from about 12 billion last year to over 15 billion this year. For deposits, it's based on the rating of the bank for NDIC. And so for us, it's about 0.7% of total deposits. That's what we pay as NDIC premium. So the total assets includes both total assets and contingents. Okay. So on the fair value loss, so we have securities, we have in our trading book, if you look at our December position, you see that we had instruments in our trading book. And then by the time you look at our Q1 numbers, you see that there was almost absolutely nothing in the trading book. So when we saw interest rates going up, we disposed of the assets in the trading book. By the time we disposed of those assets, from a mark-to-market perspective, we already had a loss of about $4.6 billion on those instruments. Now, for instruments that are in the available-for-sale book, that's what led to the $18.8 billion mark-to-market losses. So basically, it's a case of interest rates rising. The prices of those securities, when you compare December to March, was lower. So that's what led to the $18.8 billion. Now, why do we have those securities on the available for sale book? We have those securities there. Some of them are also for managing our liquidity. If you look at our numbers for last year, full year last year, we had mark-to-market gains on those available for sale securities of almost $20 billion. So when the interest rates were going down, we rode the curve. We made about $20 billion. Obviously, this year, interest rates have increased. We've lost a bit on that. But last year, we made about $20 billion on that line. Thank you very much.
Kunde, does that answer all of your questions?
So the increase in them, that's from FY20, from $295 million to $2.4 billion. Maybe they could just, maybe Emmanuel could just share more light on that.
On which, sorry. On which particular line, please?
Individuals.
Okay, so for individuals, the increase in the MPL for individuals, is it increase in the MPL or increase in stage 2 books?
It was an increase in stage 2 loans. When you look at stage 2 loans, so there was a movement to, from 294 million to 2.4 billion
okay.
In Q1.
Okay, so the CRO will take that.
Our individual loans are structured loans tied to repayment sources. So we have domiciliation of salaries, and that comes in to clean up any exposure. So the increase in stage 2 loans that you saw there was basically a result of a delay in those payments coming in. Now, it's not unusual, and you find that usually these payments come in and clean up those exposures. So that's basically the reason for that increase. We're not worried about it because these are usually temporary delays that get cleaned up within a short time. Thank you.
Sorry, just on the final question. Sorry, I noticed that increase in your mandatory deposit with CBN. That was 14.4 yesterday. Sorry, I noticed that increase in your mandatory deposit with CBN. It increased 14.4 yesterday. So I looked at your loan to deposit and then loan to total funding. I said it was in line with the regulatory guidelines. So I think probably could just shed more light as regards related to the increase in mandatory deposit.
Okay. Thanks so much. My name is Akike Babalola. Yeah, in terms of the mandatory deposit, as you are aware, yes, the central bank credited banks sometimes on the 10th of December and sometimes when the 91 days mature on the 1st of March. They rolled it over and even had it a week after. But that hasn't stopped the regulatory charge, particularly every 2 weeks where we have the retail auction. So we've been having charges coming from there. I think year to date is about $83.5 billion that we've been charged. So if you had 115 plus 20, that was given in addition, that's 135. And you take the 85 out, I mean the 83.5 out, then you can see the real impact. And you can see why we have that increase on the mandatory charge or the regulatory charge. Thank you.
Thank you.
I remember you asked a question on the clarity of where the special bill. The interest income on the special bill will go into liquid assets. 0.5.
Okay. Let me just explain a bit on the special bill. Just like I said when I was explaining the CRS side, when CBN returns base,
the yield that it was issued to banks was 0.5. And when it matured on the 1st of March, and it was rolled over for another 91 days, they still retained the 0.5 on it. So I don't actually know what you want us to really explain in terms of where the income goes, but it's just a yield of 0.5 that the CBN allocated those funds to banks. I don't know if this clears the question. Thank you.
So, thank you so much. Thank you. So what I'm looking at is that if I look at your interest income breakdown, so like on that one line on your interest income breakdown, should I be looking at those costs of the special bill? The interest that is coming from the special bill, under what line should I be looking at the interest income?
Sorry, ma'am, this is the operator. If you don't mind just repeating what he said.
I was trying to confirm that he asked us a question about the funding cost regarding our deposits. If you can repeat the question so we can answer it.
Kunde, if you don't mind repeating your question.
On the funding cost, you've guided 10 to 15% deposit growth. So given the fact that the interest rate has been rising, like what should we be expecting in terms of how it's going to impact your funding cost? I don't. Ali, can you hear me?
Sorry, ma'am, were you able to hear his question?
No. Can you please repeat the question?
Okay. I said you've guided 10 to 15% deposit growth. And considering the fact that interest rate has been rising, so what should we be looking at in terms of your funding cost for FY21?
This, we believe, would not impact our guidance because no doubt the rising yields present a challenge for deposit growth and could mean offering higher interest rates to our customers to ensure the deposit rate remains with fidelity. However, if you check our history, we have grown our deposits year on year minimum 30%, and as at last year, we grew our deposits by almost 50%. So we think that what we have guided is it's easy for us to achieve despite the challenges. However, we have expanded our services to ensure that the loyalty of our customers are strengthened and sustained. And like we said earlier on, we have been recruited a new CIO and a new CDO to ensure that we move to the next phase of our digital transformation and innovation. And all of this is targeted at ensuring that we up our game in our retail play. So with all of this, we think we're going to be able to sustain that deposit growth projection, and we will be able to achieve it. And moreover, if you noticed, 25% of our deposits are in the savings accounts, and the savings accounts are benchmarked against the MPR. So that will help us to keep our cost of funding reasonably low. The mix, our mix is very good, and we're very proud of it. Our mix is almost 80-20. So with that, we think we'll be able to, in between all of these efforts, maintain our name and our low cost of funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jerry Nibwe from Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for the call and congrats on your strong numbers. I just have a few questions. Some are follow-up to what has been asked previously. First and foremost, on the OCI loss, especially the fair value MF loss that was recorded there, I want to assume that it's unrealized. So is there any concern that at some point in the year it's going to be realized and move to your P&L? So is there any concerns that we'll probably see a weaker performance giving rising rates, and that could also potentially impact dividends? That's one. And secondly, I want to speak to liquidity. So I can see that your liquidity ratio declined during the quarter. And, looking at what's been going on in the industry, it appears there's been some sort of tightening of liquidity. Banks have been aggressive in a way at the SLF window. So I want to know, have you been selling down on your special bills? You know, have you been? I also see that your interbank borrowings increased during the quarter. So can you speak to liquidity? What are you seeing? And if there are any concerns there, we can see that interbank rates, you know, have been inching significantly higher in the last few days. So if you can speak to that, that would also be helpful. If we're interest income, yeah, I can see, you know, interest from loans has been a bit stable, but from investment securities. While you noted that some of the assets were not rolled over at concluded yields, but is that really the case, or did you go short in anticipation of higher yields on some of these assets? So if you can give some clarity, because if it's the argument that rates were lower, however, you also recorded market losses because rates are higher. I'll just need a bit more clarity on that front. I think those are the questions I have. Thank you.
Fair value OCI loss, no. It's not likely to be realized, but I'll have the CFO speak to it.
We are not likely to realize that. In the first place, you only realize those fair value losses or gains when they are matured, and at that point you recognize them. It goes to PBT line. But just let me let you know that all we are doing now, we are at the stage of realigning our portfolio in the fixed income securities to ensure that we minimize these losses and pushing more to HTM, held to maturities. And this obviously will play out well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Your second question on the liquidity drop, ratio drop, it's deliberate and it's strategic because we try to optimize our balance. If you go to our loan growth, you see that we grew our loan in last quarter by 100 billion. And by 7% by in terms of percentage growth. So we needed to, with the yields dropping, and we needed to move to a higher income. We needed to ensure that we get higher income from building our loan book. Thank you. So it's more or less a balance optimization strategy. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Just in addition to what the MD said, like you noted, yes, the LR reduced. If you look at the 2020 figure, you will also see that at the start of the disbursement, that's even the special bill, what the CBN said is that it is tradable. What it means is that you can actually leverage your need and then see how you can spread it to add more to your income. This we did for 2020 financial year, and the strategy will still continue this year. Just as it has been said, 100 billion was created in the loan side. That's one of the outlets. And of course, you know, CRR was still being debited, just like somebody asked on this call, that our regulatory deposits, you know, tends to increase. But the 3.52 also went to that. So all these have a way of partially impacting the LR. But I think the major thing is just to make sure that the strategy we run around our loan creation is what actually caused that decline, but we are very mindful of it, and it's just a deliberate strategy. Thank you.
Jerry, does that answer your question? Do you have any further questions?
Yes, on the interest income.
Sorry, sir, were you able to hear Jerry's question with regards to the interest income?
No.
Jerry, if you could please repeat your question.
Yes, so I said I wanted to know what drove down the, what drove interest income lower, especially on investment securities, right, for OCI assets. You had attributed it to weaker yields, but then again, we also know that yields have been rising, you know, at least attested by the M2M losses that you recorded. So what really, did you go short on some assets anticipation that used to become higher eventually? I just want to know.
Hi, this is the operator. I just wanted to confirm if you were able to hear Jerry's question.
Yes, we got Jerry's question. So it's basically the investment risk. The securities we bought last year, those we bought at the third and fourth quarter of last year when rates were very low,
If you look at the interest income we're now earning on those securities, it's pretty low compared to 12 months ago. However, from a reinvestment risk perspective, we've stayed at the short end of the curve. We've tried to stay at the short end of the curve, not for all classes of assets. And when the CFO was speaking at the assets that were available for sale book. If you look at the assets there, for some of them, we've got a longer duration. And that's one of the reasons why he was saying that will not be realized. So it's a reinvestment risk that crystallized, but we expect that when those securities mature, and we now need to reinvest them this year, we'll now be locked into higher asset yields. And that is also one of the reasons why for the most expensive of the time deposits, from a strategic perspective, you saw a decline also in the time deposits. Because when we saw that the yields, the investment yields on those assets were lower, then we also have to optimize from a funding cost perspective. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just another reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. We will pause to see if there are any further questions. Nneka, we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments before we conclude?
For participating today on this call, over the years, Fidelity has reported strong growth across key indices, and we will continue to strive to maintain this trajectory. I look forward to meeting you in person as the situation allows it. If you require any further information, please reach out to our investor relations team. I'm sure the numbers are on the web. Thank you very much, and God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.